Awesome. Yosef, thank you for being here with me today.
Yeah, no problem.
So I think I want to start back with hardcore and metal because you and I share a lot of the same reference points in the sense that you grew up in that scene. Could you just talk to me about your entry point, what it was like going to shows growing up?
I'm from like a super small town in Oregon. So, our local scene was like covered 150 mile radius, really. So it was like, you go to a show and you see the same people constantly because it was like there was only 30 or 40 of us. But yeah, I've been going to shows probably since I was like 13 or 14. There was a venue where I grew up called Music Head that was like a death metal CD spot that had a venue in there that was really sick. And yeah, going to shows and my entryway really to hardcore and like outside of just like metal, just like being like, oh, I like heavy music was like a couple shows got booked in my area when I was like probably 15. And, people came from out of town and were beating the shit out of each other. And I was like, what's this all about? Yeah. And, some of my best friends to this day are people I met when I was 15 years old standing outside of a venue. Still to this day. So, yeah, that definitely shaped a lot of the, I think also like the DIY aspect of everything, for me was like, we didn't, I had to drive to where I live now when I was a young teenager or hitch a ride with a friend to like catch like a big show because nothing was coming through our area. Small group of people throwing shows or like trying to find venues to like build anything in our local community. So it was sick. Lots of fun, lots of stupid stuff per usual, but like, yeah, my first recollections though of like violent shows and stuff were like when we got like a couple, we had this tour that was 100th, I think. Alpha and Omega, Zabalba, and I can't remember who else was on that tour, but I had been listening to Zabalba for like a little while, but I didn't know what their shows were like. And yeah, watching people just like absolutely just like hammer fist each other and stuff was like a clicking point for me where I was like, this is high. As a 15-year-old, the violence was very enticing,
Of course, let's speak to that because I haven't had enough opportunities to speak to what I consider to be the lost art of hardcore dancing. I think hardcore dancing shaped so much of my artistic existence to this day. Could you just speak to your experiences with hardcore dancing in the scene and your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's like dickheads no matter
Yeah, of
what. Like
course.
where there's like alternative culture that is like based around like extreme thoughts or like extreme emotions, there's gonna be people who show up and are maybe like a little crazy with it. But yeah, I think it's definitely like, it's somewhere between the condoned violence of football and dancing is how I've always felt about it. And to see someone, it's like one thing that you see like someone crowd killing and you're like, okay, that guy just punches people in the head. But when you see someone like for the first time, like hit some crazy spin kick or something, and realizing that like there's a like a for lack of a better word, but a swag to it. There's like an art form to the dance, and like you were basically all in agreement that this is the place where you get to hurt each other, basically through dance. It's sick, you know what I mean? Like, I just went to a show on Saturday to watch kind of my band that I don't play in full time, I write for, and then my other friend's band. And there's, like the scene in Portland right now is crazy. There's kids that are like 15 years old, showing up and throwing like butterfly kicks and jumping off of things. And it's like, oh, it reminds me of like back in the day now, which is weird to go to a show and feel like I'm kind of in the older-ish category. But yeah, I mean, the mutual combat sort of violence thing is like, it's inherently like really crazy to people who have not experienced that. But it's also like it's like a condoned space for you to do that. And as long as you're within the bounds of the rules, unlike a street fight or something, you know what I mean? Everybody gets to walk away with something like released, which is
Totally.
like kind of a beautiful thing, you know what I mean? Especially because like if you're into an alternative subculture, chances are, you know what I mean? There's something going on in your life a lot
I
of
agree.
times. Yeah, so it's like, you know what I mean? maybe your parents fight, maybe you don't have your dad in your life, maybe you don't have your mom in your life, maybe XYZ thing is happening. Most of those people, you know, who are outside of hardcore will find not as productive ways to express that. Whereas it's like, you know, you get to go to a show and yell and you and your friends beat the shit out of each other and then your friends afterwards, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, like this was my space to do that and I'm not carrying that when I leave. So I think it was like, yeah, I think all that stuff, very formative to me and a lot of my friends, and like, you know, having a constructive place to be a shithead basically instead of like out on the streets was very positive.
Of course. No, I think you articulated that perfectly. That's great. Because I'm such a fan to this day. I just watch videos on YouTube now in terms of hardcore dancing and choreography. You know, I exited that part of my life probably what during the MySpace scene, regrettably, but you know, you kind of age out of it. What can you do if you're like
totally
post 30 spin kicking a kid in the head? So
yeah,
I don't know.
100%. I have some friends that are still like in it and they're like 30 and they've all been like, when I turn 30, man, I'm retiring. And then all of them just keep doing it and just hurting themselves. It's hilarious. I'm like a stand at the back of the stage guy now. Like, you know what I mean? I understand that that's like, it's not necessarily my zone anymore as much as it's like for the youth. And it's almost more fun to watch like the new kids and like their style and like how crazy they get. You know?
Yeah, of course. Sick. Well, you know, speaking to those reference points that you mentioned earlier, I know you're a fan of Fear Before the March of Flames, which is an incredibly esoteric band. I mean, I grew up going to their shows. Let's speak to that and go from there.
This is the second time I've ever been asked about them. That's more like top 10 all-time bands for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, like my youth, you know, like I said, I come from a family similar to like what I was talking about where people were absent, whatever. So a lot of my upbringing in my like being shown the ropes of just life in general and music were done by people that were older than me. And so I was, you know, 15, 14 hanging out with people who were like 17 to like 22 basically, who like took me under their wing. And you know, I went through like a lot of phases really fast in music. I like started on the trad, you know, Iron Maiden, Metallica, Black Sabbath route. And then I found like really traditional old school death metal. And then I went to like the metalcore zone where it was like scene kid vibe. Started phasing out of that. And I had a friend who was like, you know, I was 14 or something and I was looking for new music. And he showed me four bands really that changed my life that I still think about to this day, like the imprint they had on me. It was Wolves in the Throne Room, Converge, Crystal Castles, and Fear Before the March of Flames.
Mm.
And he, instead of showing me Odd How People Shake or anything like that, because he was like, you will understand those records. I want to show you the record you won't understand. And he showed me the Always Open Mouth. And we listened to it together in front of my computer, sitting next to each other, and just sat in silence and listened to the record front to back. And just like would stop, pause it, and talk about what we thought about it. And he was like, the big thing I remember him telling me is he was like, I couldn't tell you what this is. I couldn't tell you what genre this is anymore. Cause like the old stuff's like kind of scramsy, like post-hardcore. But he was like, when they started getting to this zone, this is something new. This is different. And from the moment he showed me that album, the amount of times I've listened to the Always Open Mouth front to back, cause it like feels, it's like the first album I think I experienced as like, you know, the same way you experience a book or a movie.
Of course.
Where I was like, oh, you can feel the pacing of the album. You know what I mean? Like this song's slower on purpose. They didn't just write a slow song. This song moves in a different direction to lay way to the next song. You know what I mean? So yeah, that band's super important to me. I still think about the cryptic Facebook post they did fucking 11 years ago where they were like, new music, no jokes, and then never said anything else. But
they never, you know, dropped, yeah.
Yeah. I also am a fan of self-titled when they just did Fear Before and dropped the whole name. I know that record like is kind of like a sore subject to some people, but the self-produced, like them behind everything, I think that's one of the coolest records that was ever made. And for some reason, people just don't have the affinity for it because they're not doing like the scramsy style stuff. But, you know, I think that's one of those two records together are records where it's like, an artist, like, you know, they were so young, but an artist going, venturing so far in a direction that they no longer fit the confines of something, which is like the ultimate inspiration to me, where it's like you can draw, you know, comparisons, but you have to do like more than two comparisons, you know, because first records, you could be like, oh, this sounds like this band. They're contemporaries at the time. But those records, you're like, there's kind of like a, kind of like their old album, but it kind of sounds like an indie album, but it also sounds like it's influenced by like industrial, but it also has like weird different singing on it that could be like goth, you know what I mean? Like, I love records like that where it's like, I don't know what the fuck they were doing, but it's its own thing.
Well, that's a perfect segue because that gets really to the heart of your influences, but also moving on to where you started, I would say venturing out of metal and hardcore into producing beats and blending genres. Yep. And I think that's where things get really interesting. I mean, what ignited this shift? And tell me some more about the SoundCloud era and what that led to.
Yeah, so like obviously I'm going to shows, I'm playing in like bands and stuff. I've played guitar since I was like 13, I think. So, you know, I've been in a number of bands. And I have like an adoptive older brother who was rapping when I was a teenager. And I had I downloaded a DAW, but it was just because I wanted to record guitar and learn how to like self-produce a demo. And so while I was doing that, he was like, you should make me beats. And I was like, I don't know how to do that, but I'll try, you know? So he gave me sample CDs, which is like a different, like, whole different vibe of production where it's like you have to take the samples off the disc, which a lot of people don't know about because they're used to downloading zips. But so I would do these two things in tandem, and there were two different worlds to me. It was like whatever I was not emotionally getting, like creatively, you know, producing was like, oh, I make beats and I don't have to wait on a bass player. I don't have to wait on a drummer. I don't have to go to band practice. I can make music in the confines of just self and like get that gratification. As things started like progressing, I was like learning how to record my own music, like bands and stuff in DAW as well. And, you know, really informal. And then I had a band when I was like 17, 18. And I had wanted it to go like this certain direction where I was like, I want it to be like kind of an industrial hardcore band, but it was coming from like a guitar standpoint. And that band broke up and is basically not broke up, but just kind of dissolved. As soon as that band kind of stopped, it was like, well, I'm already like pushing so far in one direction with my production that all of that started to just kind of like bleed together for me, where it was just like, oh, like, well, I'm not writing guitar heavy music anymore. So like all of a sudden I like needed to put more distortion in like the production side of things. And that just very, very rapidly started evolving, you know, like it was always rooted in industrial for me. Like I always wanted to make more industrial things. And a lot of my contemporaries were doing that. I just always felt like from a production standpoint, that was not what people were looking for. So I was just like, oh, well, I just make beats. You know what I mean? You got to like suit the person that you're working for. And then once I stopped doing that as much, I, you know, kind of just was like, okay, well now I'm going to like, you know, I need the factory samples. Like I need to like get to where I want to be. And, yeah, it started blurring really fast. Like, I mean, Optic Core used to go by Hellion. I credit him to this day as being one of the people that like him, Kelbender, Prez, 50 Grand, all people that I was used to be in a group with. The people that absolutely shifted my whole entire perspective on the production realm, where it was like, you know, why is this just an instrumental, but it's also a song, you know what I mean? Versus like, oh, I have to make an instrumental for somebody to sing on. Otherwise it will never be released. And, as I was like working with them and like collaborating with them and learning from them, it just kind of like kept spiraling until it, you know, now we're at some very abstract place that's hard to articulate, but it's like, you know, I can't like overstate those four people's impact on me as like a young, I think I was 17 or 18 when I found all of that. And it was like, these are people I look up to they're my contemporaries and they're teaching me. It very much like accelerated the pace of everything I was doing.
Sure. And, you know, speaking to that abstraction, you know, I've had this conversation many times whereby I say, you know, genres need not exist. I'm sure you agree. So many aspects of your music production especially touch on genres that I love, including industrial, which I'd like to talk about some more in just a little bit.
Totally.
And touching back very briefly on some of the artists you've worked with, of course, during that era that you're describing, XXXTentacion, Ski Mask, yep. Slump God, I would just like to know a little bit about what those experiences were like, because it was such a moment in time and that everyone remembers. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was really crazy. I think, like, the thing that I, when I have talked about this in the past, like, the thing I guess I don't really get to mention that much, or I forget to mention, mm-hmm. is, like, they weren't big when that happened. Like, when we worked together, that was right before everything blew up. Right mm-hmm. before, you know, X's prison time and the allegations, and, like, which in turn ended up making me leave Members Only, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But so, like, in this time frame, it's not like I'm working with, like, a A-list celebrity superstar. It was two people who stayed at my house because they were playing a show, and I had produced for him once before. So he was like, oh, we should make music together when we get there. You know, and it was like King. It's, everybody thinks King is like this, like, really thought out song. It was like, you know, I played that guitar line. It was my warm-up guitar line, you know what I mean? And he was like, you should record that, recorded it. We wrote the whole song in 45 minutes and released it, like, hours later. And it was just like, you know, it wasn't like this, like, grand scheme or, like, really thought out thing. It was just like, everything was very impulsive. And it was just like, oh, we're just, like, making a song right now. You know, like, going back, I would obviously, just on the production end of things, it's like, that song sounds like shit to me now. I very clearly didn't think about it that much. But yeah, I mean, it was like, I don't know. It's like hard to articulate what it's like to work with someone, be very attached to their name, for, you know, just through production. And then also, like, the B side of, like, ended up not being a great person, did a lot of terrible things and had a lot of trauma in his life that perpetuated him into a cycle of fucking, you know, I mean, generational trauma realistically. And also being like, I made songs with him. That's not like, that doesn't speak to my character. This is pre any of that, but also having to, like, you know what I mean? It taught me a lot of lessons. Not being attached to somebody else's career for the rest of my life was one of the biggest things it taught me, which is ultimately, like, you know, between everything that happened and the allegations leveraged against him, and then thinking about, like, people think that this is, like, who I'm going to work with forever. I was like, I got to move on, you know? This is not my friend anymore. So, yeah, I mean, it was a very hectic time and very hard to, like, you know, pinpoint. Because, I mean, even then, too, like, I turned 19 the day after they got to my house. So I was 18 years old when I did all of this. It was like, you know, so I think a lot of people, like, articulated as, like, this, like, really methodical, thought out time. Whereas, you know, he was younger than I was when he was at my house. I think he was 17. And I didn't even know that until we talked about our birthdays. So it was like very impulsive kids, you know what I mean? Making music and just releasing it. And then, yeah.
Well, that's interesting because I think it speaks, and this is my takeaway from that, because that speaks to how prescient you were when it came to the artistic standpoint of this particular moment in time. And I think, you know, that is totally separate from all of the character considerations that people totally. Have, certainly.
And 100%.
So, yeah. And so you were able to transition by making that decision. I'm glad you articulated by making that decision that I do not wish to adhere solely to another individual's career. You made this transition, and that marks exactly what I want to talk about.
Yeah.
You continued on to doing a song with Static Dress. And I'm not sure. I'd like to hear your sentiments at the time, because when I first came across Static Dress, out of everything that was happening around 2019, 2020, I said, this is the band somehow in my mind that leads the post-hardcore revival. Everything else sounds referential. This is new, and I feel something I haven't felt in years. And that brings me to you and the song that you did with them. I'd love to hear about that process.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, I found Static Dress when they released Safe Word.
Yeah.
April 2020, I think. And I followed Ollie because I was just like, this is crazy. This reminds me of, like, you know what I mean? I'm cutting holes in my sweatshirt and I'm walking down the hallways. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, I got thumb holes again. And yeah, so I was like, this is sick though. Like the artistic direction of this and like the visuals of this, I was like, it's so calculated. Like I was like, it's awesome. Super inspiring. So him and I just started chatting and, you know, I would send him stuff. He would send me stuff. And we were just like in this like tandem, like inspiration sort of vibe is what it felt like, where it was like, if I needed help with something or I needed to articulate something, like I would call Ollie, you know, or if he needed, had a question or like a thought about something, he would call me. And so eventually we had talked about working on songs together, but you know, it's like when the time's right, I'm never like a person that's like, oh, here's a thing. Like we have to do it. You know what I mean? I'm always about like, when it feels the exact correct moment, then we'll make it the correct moment. And he was working on the album, like they all were obviously, but he called me and he was like, there's this part of the song that I want to be really gnarly. I have the lyrics. I have the part. I just need you to track it. And he was like, I think your voice is the right voice for it. And I was like, cool, let's do it. So he sent me the tracks, had a reference with it and everything, you know, and was like, give me a couple different things. And I was like, cool, easy. And then like the music video, he, you know, I think the thing that is so inspiring about Ollie as a person and as a friend and as an artist is just like his vision, his ability to direct because of how strong his vision is like, you know, not everybody has that. So even just working with him on that song, like when it came to the music video, he told me exactly like where he wanted the light, what kind of backdrop he wanted, you know, like what kind of shots I should do. And he was like, this basically like, here's your list. This is what I need from you to make what I want to happen, happen. Wow. And you don't work with artists like that a lot. It's a lot of like, what do you think? You know what I mean? Which is cool. That's the collaboration zone. But whereas with him, it's like, it's how far he's calculating ahead to see what he wants is like, you know, one can hope that your artistic vision is that strong that frequently. So yeah, I recorded my parts, sent them over, and then got the demo back and was like, hell yeah, let's do it. So yeah, very simple collaboration, but
sure,
one I get talked to about a lot, obviously, because in their own right, they're prolific for such a young band and how fast they've been moving. And I think that speaks not to like, you know, a lot of people have tried to leverage at their industry plants or something. Whereas it's like, you know, I talk to Ollie and every time I talk to Ollie, he's working. You know, he's 5 music videos ahead of wherever they are. He's already next album ahead. You know what I mean? He already has the next steps calculated and he's always working towards that goal. So, you know, there's a reason they're playing arenas and it's because their vision is so strong and they know exactly what they need to do.
Absolutely. But that also speaks to, see, you have such an in-depth level. What I'm learning from you after speaking to you, in-depth knowledge of the genres that we love so much. You know these deep cuts, you know these very esoteric bands, and I think you have the ability, and that touches back on fear before, because were I to speak to anyone else about that, it's lost in the annals of post-hardcore history, so to speak. And because of that, that's why I think it's so interesting, your wealth of knowledge. So let's get to your album and Underlying Hum. I'd like to hear about this notion of you crafting songs that linger and haunt. What are some stories or themes as it applies to that project from your perspective?
Yeah, so that whole album, every single song other than Frame is a person, place, or thing. It's a memory of a person or a group of people. Like every single one of those songs relates back to a real world tangible thing to me. And so the sentiment of the whole album was that I was like, wanted to do something that was like a therapy exercise and felt like I was like, you know, really reveling in the honesty of something where there was a lot of vulnerability and a lot of risk. Because before that, you know what I mean? I was like making King Yosef stuff, but it wasn't risky. There was no like, oh, like I'm putting myself really on display. It was more just like, oh, I just want to write a song and I'm going to release it. Oh, I'm going to make a small album and I'm going to release it. You know, and it was really just like exercises and production and figuring myself out. So that record was like a conscious decision probably at the beginning of end of 2019, beginning of 2020, when I started the process. Mm-hmm. And I borderline, like I did that record in tandem with my therapist, where it would be like, you know, insert thing that I've been thinking about subconsciously, or like something I think about when I lay down at night, you know. And the goal was to trap each memory, basically, or each person, each thing that was like sitting inside of me, taking up space in my head, as like a framed moment in a song. So I can revisit them whenever I want now, but I don't have to participate it in my own subconscious life or my, like, you know what I mean? In my head. Now these things are trapped and I hold the power over them to access them whenever I want. It was kind of that was the sentiment of the album, which, you know what I mean? Also plays into like the lyrical themes of like why I'm repeating phrases or like turning a phrase where it sounds similar, but I say something different, you know what I mean? As it relates to, the person, place, or thing that I'm talking about at the time. So, you know, like power is a revenge song, you know, power is like talking about the worst parts of yourself. And like, you know, the urge that we all have for revenge, feeling powerless as a child to people that are not good human beings, and getting older and seeing the way those people react to you as a, like a fully articulate adult, and how they get uncomfortable and they get nervous because they know that, you know, that they're a bad person and you didn't forget. So like, you know, that song is about like, fuck you, I stand on my own two feet sort of thing. And then like, you know, echoes a reflection of like addiction and the addiction that runs in my family and how close have I ridden to that line while judging those people, you know, those sorts of things. Feels strange now to be on the other side of it, reflect back.
Well, I think speaking to that a little bit more and the theme of vulnerability, that's kind of what I'm garnering from this. It takes a lot of vulnerability to have access to these parts of your psyche. You tackle themes of self-doubt, hate, authenticity. How would you describe in your own words authenticity in art? Because I think that's something that surprisingly people don't discuss enough in their own opinion. How would you describe what that looks like to you, authenticity?
I think it's being honest. Like, I think that's how I try to frame it when I'm thinking about it, is it's like every song is a snapshot of the moment you're in when you write it. Mm. So all you have to do is be honest for that moment. You know what I mean? And I think about things a lot in the context of time now, as I, you know, I've gotten to parts of my life I didn't think I'd make it to, frankly. So now it's like an underlying hum. The goal for me was 10 years from now, if I listen to this album, am I going to feel like when I wrote these songs, I was being honest? You know, it's not like, it's not singing a song because you want a song that's going to be more accessible. It's singing a song because, like, you know, I did singing on this record, not because I was like, oh, this is going to like pop off more. I did singing because it was like, this is an emotion that I can't hit if I'm just yelling the entire time. Like, I can't articulate myself just through aggression, you know, like this plays to that. So if I'm going to sing, I need to sing in a context that makes sense to the vulnerability of what I'm saying, you know, like the performance is more dictated by what you need from your soul nourishment and less about like, what does this mean when it's released? I think, you know. And it's okay to think about like the concepts behind like releasing. Like, I write songs and I'm like the two latest singles, I definitely thought them about them in a live circumstance. But how far can I get thinking about other people and also achieving my vision and not compromising? You know what I mean? Like, wow. The context of Shame's Mirror, even, it's like a two-part song, you know? And the front half is soft, not because I think people will like it more because I sang. The front half is soft because I want the second half to hit twice as hard. You know what I mean? And that was my vision. And if it just so happens that people like it more because they're singing on it, then cool. But like, that can't be the forefrontal process, I think, for the authenticity. And it's like, if you phrase yourself as like a pop artist for, you know, then like, we know that authentically your job is to write music that people are going to digest. But if you are like trying to be like an artist, quote unquote, like, I think it comes within the conviction of honesty, and like the starting point has to be the correct place. You know what I mean? I think everything else is a byproduct of the starting point, in regards of like, you know, you don't think about writing a pop song. Like, you know, I'm not thinking about writing a singing song because I need to get more people to listen to me. I want to sing because that's what I want to do, and it feels good, and like it caters to like my vision and how I feel when I'm writing a song, you know. I think when you're taking other people into consideration too much for your art, then it's like, then what is the art if it's not just you? It's kind of how it feels. So I think like the album even is like being as honest as possible was like, that was the authenticity for me. It was like, do I feel scared? You know what I mean? Like, do these lyrics freak me out that other people are going to read them? Yes. So like, okay, that feels authentic to me then. That's the road we have to go down. I can't backtrack and be like, oh, well, I'm going to make the lyrics a little nicer so it's like less intimidating. Or like, you know, a lot of people talk about how dark that album can be or intense in certain parts. And it's like, that's the point. You know what I mean? I want it to feel like something that you, like a journal entry that you almost feel like you shouldn't be listening to. You know, I want it to feel like you're on a trip with me, not like a third party just watching something. I want it to feel like you're like, oh shit, like, you know, it's a little dark. I don't want you to just like view it as a third thing. I want it to be something everybody can participate in via it being honest and people connecting with it.
That's unreal. That's so methodical. I'm just digesting that for a second because that's incredibly methodical the way you approach that.
I think about it a lot.
You know, that brings up fan engagement because you're talking about the way people approach it, people digest it. You found unique ways to engage with your fans, like requiring confessions for access to new singles.
Yeah.
So let's talk about these, what I would consider innovative new ways of approaching fan engagement. This is really cool. So let's speak to that.
I think it's the same thing as it's like, I'm giving a lot, you know? So give me something back and then you get something out of me. You know, this like, I think it's just the regards of like, give something to get something is like how it feels to me. So, you know, even if only 10 people do it, it's like those 10 people are more dedicated than anybody else, you know? And also like back in the day when I did the first confession route, that was like, I was like, you know, like a couple people will do it. And I was getting like crazy confessions from anonymous people where, you know, the things that they were saying in these confessions was like shit that they actually needed to get off their chest. And I think within that, it's also like building a trust between the two of us. You know what I mean? I put my heart on my sleeve for music. You know what I mean? You know where I'm at mentally by the song. You know, I'm telling you a lot more about me than my family knows. You know what I mean? So by giving me your thing back, it's like, this is us together. This isn't just me releasing a song. Like, this is yours too. You know, it's even like in the regards of like live performances. If somebody wants the microphone because they know the words and they mean something to them, it's their fucking microphone. It's not mine. I'm like, the idea is for everybody to participate on this. Like if you connect with it on a deeper level, then it's yours too. You know, that's what I want. The same way when I was 15 and one of my favorite bands would play and I tried to jump up there to grab a microphone because those words meant so much to me. Like if kids feel that way about anything I do and connect with it on any level that they want to give a little bit more of themselves, I'm trying to make an open space where like they can do that, you know? But yeah, the give and the get is always what I call it. You know, like I don't do it as much publicly now, but like within Discord, it's like, you know, by being in my Discord and like participating in the other things that are going on, it's like you're on a different level of participation. So I give you a different level of like, hey, here's a snippet of the song. You know about the song coming out before anybody else. You can see the music video before everybody else because you're participating with me. We're in this together.
Wow. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. This notion of mutual reciprocity. That's really cool. That brings us to Cut the Cord.
Yep.
Let's talk Cut the Cord front to back. I just would like to hear you opine on this track, your thoughts, your feelings, your sentiments, whatever you wish to discuss.
I wrote, so there's additionally more singles coming out. I wrote a group of songs directly after the album came out. I think the first song I wrote was 2 weeks after An Underlying Hum came out. because I had been under the weight of an underlying hum for years, you know what I mean? Like trying to see that through to make it feel like it was good. So once that was out, I was hit with this like, oh, I'm free. Like there's no project that this goes to that it has to fit into this thing. Like I was like, I need to move in such a way that I'm showing people that this, it doesn't stop, you know? Like I didn't release a fucking album and you're gonna have to wait 5 years for me to do anything, you know? So that was kind of like, as I was writing these songs, I was just like extremely inspired. And I was like, I'm just going to keep it moving. Like it's happening. So lyrically, everything's kind of Freudian to me to a degree. I don't sit down and like the first half of writing a song to me is not sitting down and writing lyrics. I generally will start with something and have half of an instrumental or something. And then basically every first 4 to 8 lines of every song I've ever written is in that space when you're about to fall asleep, where like if you felt like you were falling, it would scare you awake. And I leave my notepad open on my phone. And whatever comes out, like if all of a sudden I'm like hearing a phrase in my head, I have like lyrics, I will just write them down and not think about it, go to bed. And then when I come back to my studio and start working on something, I'll look through lyrics and what I thought I meant by something. And as I write the song, it'll kind of reveal itself. So in a desperate moment, you and I could be the same, leverage humility, you know, weaponized for gain. Like that was just something that I wrote down in my phone right before I went to bed. And I'd been thinking about a lot of things in that week span. Mm-hmm. And so when I brought it in here, I started to like, you know, I'm never trying to like methodically be like, what's the next word? I will just like play something and space out. If I hear something production-wise that I need to change, I'll change that. But otherwise, it's like I will listen and I will be like, you know, da da da, and then I'm like, as soon as I go to grab my phone, whatever the first words that come out are, that's the phrase, and I need to maybe change a word in it. But the words are more important to me than fitting something like structurally or melodically. Like that's how it all starts for me. But yeah, so the idea with Cut the Cord, like as I kept moving through it, was like, this needs to be a song that one works in a live circumstance. Like as it started moving, I was like, oh, this is a live song. Like I want something that feels like you cannot help but move when this happens, whether it's moshing, whether it's dancing, you know what I mean? Because like I play with a lot of different types of bands and, yeah, I just moved through that process. I got the demo done, started performing it on the Converge tour I did before it was ever recorded to kind of test the waters and be like, okay, how does this song work as I've like, you know, maybe you need to add like a 2 second pause before a breakdown or something like that. And first time we played it, I like felt it in my body that I was like, this is right, as we were going through the song. And you know, there's just like certain things that you're like, oh, I understand that this works in a live circumstance with people just by the reaction I'm getting. Got off that tour and 5 days later went to the studio and recorded it with Kurt from Converge. And then, yeah, the whole recording process was, you know, we did the album together. So we had just gotten off tour together. Approaching that whole situation definitely felt like a friend. You know, a little bit less like he's one of the fucking guys, you know, and not to say that he's not, but also a little bit more like we're contemporaries and understanding like the vibe of him being like, I'm just trying to do your vision justice. So, you know, like the mix on these songs even, and just like the production from everybody I worked with and myself, it feels like the closest to like where I've wanted to be. In the sonic space, you know, I want things to be hard to understand what part's human, what part's not, is always the goal. You know, like I love industrial, I love traditional industrial, but I think there's a place for something that's supposed to sound mechanical to a degree where you're like, oh, this is not humans doing this part. That's cool. But I think there's also like looking towards the future, the only thing that's going to make music sound like something that's not been done is by using that part of it and blending it together with things that feel extremely organic, you know, to the point where it's like, you know, like people thought Cut the Cord had guitars in it. There's not a single guitar in that entire song. The whole song's just synths that I made. And then it's like, but there's live drums, you know what I mean? And I'm using certain live samples that feel like a room sometimes, because I want it to be like, I don't know where the line of anything is, you know, if there's like a preconceived notion about it, because I think that's like, that's where we get to a new space.
Wow. Let's speak to industrial. Let's speak to industrial coming off of that, because I'm a huge industrial fan, and it doesn't run counter to your genre bending in other areas. It complements it so well. What is your approach to industrial and just how you feel as a fan of industrial as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, I will definitely say, like, so like my introduction to industrial, my mom was like a young, my parents are very young. So, you know, my mom was a teenager when Pretty Hate Machine came out.
Wow.
Okay. And Skinny Puppy is like one of my mom's favorite bands of all time. Like, you know, when I started getting into heavy music, the amount of times my mom was like, you have to listen to Jesus Built My Hot Rod by Ministry. You have to listen to Jesus Built My Hot Rod by Ministry. So like the foundation of industrial, or like, you know, my mom had the CD I remember in her car the most, other than the Outkast speaker box CD, was the Depeche Mode Greatest Hit CD. And she would listen to it religiously. So, yeah, I think the biggest thing for me, just in any genre, not just industrial, but like me taking from things, like I want to honor and respect them. You know, I think I'm not necessarily an anti-genre person, as much as I think it's important to understand the history of each thing that you are going to take from, because you're not just taking something sonically. Every genre is a cultural moment, and it's a time frame that has importance to a cause. You know what I mean? Like, industrial is not just clanky machines. It's also like queer people in Chicago feeling comfortable to come out and take their space in like bad parts of the fucking city. And all those people were just in a space together, and they didn't have bands. They had machines. So that's how they fucking made music, because there was nothing else to do. But also within that, it's like, you have to understand the rules, not the rules, but the guidelines of what makes a genre, to be able to take from it and work on that space. Like, I'm respectfully taking the guidelines of industrial and then disregarding them at the end of the day, you know? Like, the root of my music, I would say, is industrial, because I use samples and I use synths and, like, you know what I mean? But, like, you put me next to a Ministry song, it doesn't, I don't sound like Ministry, you know what I mean? As much as it's like, oh, maybe my snare drum does, or maybe the drum kit or the way I chopped a guitar does, because those are the things that I understand is like the hallmarks of the genre, but I don't want to just do what they did, you know what I mean? So I'm constantly like looking to the past, and like I always say, like my forefathers, or just like the people who came before you that built the ground upon which we get to walk sonically, is how I feel about it. And I think it's important to honor, respect, and understand what they do, but also understand enough that you can take from it without just doing what they did, because that almost feels more disrespectful to me. You know, like, why would I want to do what they do and try to occupy their space? Like, they already did it. Like, if anything, I want to take from them and move in a new direction that hopefully other people can see and be like, oh, you know, we do an industrial band. It doesn't have to sound just like insert band I like.
Wow. No, I love that. I love that. I'm probably going to find some really interesting quotes from this, because this paying homage to these genres is important to me, because, you know, we live in a time where people take from things aesthetically. They don't, they didn't participate. And I think participation is key. I think we grew up together in a lot of these genres. This is interesting. That brings us to our final question. We're going to talk about the world tour with Health. I'm so interested in what you have planned for the future.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've definitely been reflecting on it a lot. I'm doing a lot of preparatory work for this. For one, I'm just stoked. You know what I mean? I'm not unaware of the opportunity that is being given to me by doing this tour. So within that, I'm like being very calculated on how I'm going to approach this. The set list is a brand new set list. I'm playing songs I've never played, but it's all structured in the fact that, like, even just on the sentiment of what we were just talking about, I'm not going to play a bunch of my soft songs that I was singing. Like, why would I do that? Health does that. You know what I mean? In my head, in my vision, IC Health asking me to do this because they moved in a heavier direction. So they're asking me, a heavy artist, to be me to help them bring their vision together. So the set list is heavier. You know, I have a different crew for this tour moving forward. And everything is just much more dialed in. I think it's also like, this is going to segue into another chapter that is not announced yet, but will be announced within the coming weeks. So I have new music coming out. It's unannounced right now, but March 9th, I'll be on tour, and there's two new singles coming out. One of them being the heaviest song I've ever written. One of them being a little bit more of a sampler of spaces I would like to occupy sonically for the sake of fun and, you know, soul nourishment. And then tours that are unannounced, shows that are unannounced. Currently, I'm kind of in this space where it's like there's a lot happening, but not as much as I can fully speak to. But my priority right now is my sights are set on health, and you know, it's a proving ground is how I feel about it. Every single thing that has led up to this moment to be able to do this well, you know, every good show, every bad show has been a learning process to craft into the experience that I'm trying to put forth for these shows and show up as hard as I possibly can, because there's a lot of people who would love to have this opportunity and I'm not unaware. So I got to be at 1,000% for that, to honor just the fact that I'm there. That's how I feel.
Well, I absolutely love it. Well, I just want to say this has been an incredibly insightful conversation. As a fan of your work, I'm looking forward to you making those announcements in the coming weeks. And
thank you,
Yusuf, ultimately, thank you for being here with me, man. I appreciate you.
Yeah, of course. Not a problem. It's a good conversation. So thanks for having me. Also getting to talk about Fear Before the March of Flames for 5 minutes straight is always a good day for me.
Well, hopefully they drop soon. I'm hoping one day they'll make that comeback. We'll see.
Oh, dude, this is the funny last little thing I will say. Please. Is I did the collaborative album with Youth Code.
Yeah.
And David, the singer of Fear Before, I follow him. Mm-hmm. And he does not follow me back. He probably doesn't know I exist, which is totally fine. But he posted one of the songs I did with Youth Code. And I was like, that's it, man. I'm retiring. Like, I don't have anything else past that.
It's so, full circle, though. It's 100%. Full circle.
Yeah. Getting, when people you look up to acknowledge that your craft is something that they like, is one of the coolest things in the world. But
well,
yeah, shouts out here before.
Please, I'll put this on the pod as well, just to say that Fear Before, David, when you guys come out with a new track, King Yusuf, you guys, that's it.
Yeah, let me know.
That's it, man.
I'll do whatever. Hell yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Yusuf. I appreciate
you. Yeah, of course.
Man.